It's a funny place to be, stuck in a seemingly mundane world with an inner knowing that the universe is so much more than our mortal minds can comprehend. Yet we all have the capacity to know peace and our oneness with the wholeness of life. And through these interviews, discussions, and reflections, it is my intention to share this possibility. I'm Ryan Kurzak, and this is the Kriya Yoga Podcast. Look, there is no point in blindly believing that after I touch you, you will be saved, or that a chariot from heaven will be waiting for you. Because of the guru's attainment, the sanctifying touch becomes a helper in the blossoming of knowledge. And being respectful towards having acquired this blessing, you must yourself become a sage, and proceed on the path to elevate your soul by applying the techniques of sadhana given by the guru. Swami Sri Yukteswar. Sri Yukteswar was known as a Gyan Avatar by Paramahansa Yogananda, his student. And a Gyan Avatar is an incarnation of wisdom. Gyana means wisdom or knowledge, and avatar is a word that represents divine qualities manifesting here in this world, usually in human form. Sri Yukteswar's name, Yukteswar, it means a union with Ishwara. Yukt and Ishwar, union with Ishwara. And Ishwara is the ruling aspect of God in relationship to nature. Swami Sri Yukteswar was born in 1855, May 10th, 1855, in Serampore. His given name was Priyanath Karar. When Sri Yukteswar became an adult, he was married, and he managed properties inherited by his father. He and his wife had one daughter together. And his two main ashrams were at Puri, near the Bay of Bengal, and Serampore, near Calcutta. Now, Sri Yukteswar did not become Sri Yukteswar until the passing of his wife. Because after his wife had died, it was then he was initiated into the Swami order. And once you're initiated into the Swami order, that's where he took upon the name Sri Yukteswar. Now, Yukteswar was said to be a master of yoga and also an accomplished Vedic astrologer. He studied Ayurveda, and while a young adult, attended classes at a medical college. Now, as an astrologer, he was well known due to the chapter in Autobiography of a Yogi where he recommends that Yogananda wear a particular bangle, an astrological bangle. There's also another chapter in Autobiography of a Yogi where he recommends gemstones to be worn to help deal with astrological influences. Now, it needs to be remembered that as we refer back to the quote that we began with, Sri Yukteswar was of the mind that we had to do the necessary work to evolve ourselves internally, but also to take care of ourselves. And that when recommending something like a gemstone or an astrological bangle, that was not meant to be any kind of substitute for living a life that allowed you to be naturally healthy and well. Gemstones, bangles, astrological remedies, those are things that are recommended to be utilized when essentially either you have done all you can and you need a little extra help, or you don't have the strength or ability to do something. However, we have to be very cautious with that because too often people will decide that they are just not strong enough, when really if they would learn to exercise their will, if they would learn to practice being strong, using their willpower, rising above difficult influences, they would find that in time it might be easier than they think. So Shrikteshwara was an astrologer. He had studied Ayurveda. He was interested in medicine. He was interested in helping others for therapeutic purposes. However, his main focus was always on helping oneself. Now, there is that aphorism that we hear often, that God helps those who help themselves. Well, depending on what context that's used in, we need to be cautious with it. But what that aphorism really speaks to is what we already know about yoga practice. That what yoga does is it removes the obstacles to clarity of awareness dawning, to inner peace dawning. It removes the obstacles. Again, just like a gardener who wants to irrigate a certain area, he has to remove the dirt such that water can flow. So that notion that God helps those who help themselves, essentially, by removing the obstacles that prevents grace from flowing into your life, that is how you are helping yourself and therefore making way for supportive influences to meet you halfway. Again, this was something that Shrikteshwar promoted, as do all authentic meditation spiritual teachers. Now, Shrikteshwar is also well known for a theory of cycles or yugas. Again, we are going to do a separate podcast where we explore these cycles of the yugas because they are very important to understand where we are in the current era. And he published these findings in several journals. And essentially, the idea is that humanity goes through an average of a 24,000-year cycle due to the movement of our solar system towards the galactic center and away from the galactic center. As our solar system moves closer to the galactic center, human consciousness becomes clearer, more evolved. Meaning, if we imagine the state of being of Jesus or Buddha or some other divine incarnation that you can think of, what they know, what they were, what was obvious to them, essentially the majority of the population has that kind of obvious knowledge when we are as close to the galactic center as possible. And then the individuals who are cruel, malicious, selfish, they are then as rare as a figure like Jesus or Christ was 2,000 years ago. So the cycle goes, as the solar system, and therefore our Earth, gets closer to the galactic center, human consciousness evolves, becomes clear, understands the finer aspects of reality, and then the cycle goes in a circle. So as we come away from the galactic center, human consciousness devolves until we then have the sort of baser experiences that we see in the Dark Ages, which again peaked around 2,000, 2,500 years ago. And this is somewhat of a controversy, because many people believe we still are in the Dark Ages and that these ages are not just simply a matter of a 24,000-year cycle, but a mind-bogglingly huge number of year cycle into the millions and so on. So, you know, for the people who don't necessarily resonate with what Shrikteshwar found and published, essentially humanity is doomed for quite a few more million years to live in a psychological state of despair and darkness. And of course, we have to remember, as we will explore in that future podcast, it's more important that we ourselves do the inner work such that we can realize what it's like to exist, experience the clarity of a golden age, lift ourselves out of the mindset of a Dark Age mentality. And when we can do that, we don't really need to worry about time cycles. However, in the meantime, it's enough to know that we have left the Dark Ages and that we are currently in the beginning of the Electric Age, the ascending portion of the Electric Age, where humanity has a greater sense and understanding of electromagnetism, technology, and so on. We're just barely entering in it. So we have a good ways to go, and it's very possible that we could have mind-boggling discoveries in the centuries to come, things that we can't even comprehend right now. And that's just one cycle in. You know, there's the Dark Ages, the Electric Age, and then it ascends to the Silver Age, and then it ascends to the Golden Age, all through this 12,000-year ascension cycle before, again, it reaches the peak of the Golden Age and then descends back down to the Dark Ages. Shrikteshwar had written a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita and told Yogananda, when he was leaving for the West, to put an emphasis on teaching Kriya Yoga, teaching it through the ideas shared in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Now, of course, I'm certain, and it's obvious, should be obvious, that Shrikteshwar probably studied many spiritual texts, not simply the Bhagavad Gita, not simply the Yoga Sutras. But due to the fact that we have a commentary available on the Bhagavad Gita by Shrikteshwar, that he took the time to contemplate that and write it out, and that he had told Paramahansa Yogananda specifically to teach Kriya Yoga through the words of the Yoga Sutras, this is one of the reasons why the Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga Sutras are considered to be two of the primary texts that we use when studying and practicing Kriya Yoga. Shrikteshwar was also said to be an adept spiritual healer, although he didn't display that very often. Again, you can read more about that in Autobiography of a Yogi. Now, he was quiet, he was said to be gentle, and he was devotional. However, this was often overshadowed by his practicality. This was overshadowed by his emphasis on discernment, on understanding the truth of things. And he was quite an extreme disciplinarian. We often think that great yogis like Paramahansa Yogananda, that they just developed this self-realization, this ability to perceive the divine, this inner peace, this ability to teach and share profound concepts. We often imagine that this just happens, that they're born with it. But we cannot overlook the fact that Yogananda, while he might have had, and definitely had, inclinations toward this as a child, that he had to go through the discipline that Shrikteshwar put him through in order to become what he was. So we see people in various traditions saying that it is by the grace of the guru that these things happen. And there's often the imagination that the grace of the guru simply means that the teacher looks at them, and then through the stillness of their eyes, everything becomes understood and whole. It's a very romantic way of looking at it. But what we overlook, especially in someone like Yogananda's case, that Yogananda went through years of disciplined training, that he was not allowed to be overly emotional, that he had to hone his yogic capacity through disciplined meditation. And it's often a self-sabotaging function of humans to put a guru or a teacher on such a pedestal such that the student thinks, well, I could never achieve that. I could never know what my teacher knows, so I'm just going to submit to their wisdom and their understanding. And so then they never actually do what it takes to sit down and meditate for the long hours that it takes. They never sit down and actually study the Bhagavad Gita, the Yoga Sutras. They're waiting for the teacher or the tradition to magically make it all work for them. Again, I'm going to refer back to this quote from Shrikteshwar. He said, look, There is no point in blindly believing that after I touch you, you will be saved or that a chariot from heaven will be waiting for you. Because of the guru's attainment, the sanctifying touch becomes a helper in the blossoming of knowledge. And being respectful towards having acquired this blessing, you must yourself become a sage and proceed on the path to elevate your soul by applying the techniques of sadhana given by the guru. So in a sense, if one is trying to ride the coattails of their spiritual teacher to heaven or to enlightenment or whatever, however they want to think about it, in a sense, they are actually dishonoring the tradition, dishonoring the teacher. Because the teacher, they want you to become as spiritually strong and knowledgeable as they are. And this was most definitely true for Sri Yukteswar. To be in a authentic student-teacher relationship, there has to be that understanding that the teacher may have greater experience in time and space. And if you are a learner or a disciple or a student, then the idea of submitting to the teacher isn't you just give up everything to them. It is simply that you are submitting to applying what they have taught you. And there may be certain circumstances and situations where you don't understand what they want you to do or why they want you to do it. And if you are interacting with someone who has been trustworthy, who has led you well previously, then the goal, the idea is not to simply question and challenge for the sake of challenging. It is to say, okay, well, I've been led well before, so I'm going to simply trust that they are going to continue to lead me well. And then what I have found, at least, is that there were many circumstances and situations with my own teacher that as I was younger, I thought, oh, well, he just doesn't understand. He's too old. He doesn't know what it's like to live in the world today. He's out of touch with what's currently happening. He's too detached, so he doesn't remember what it's like to participate in a family or to have friends, to have a life. These were all things that when I was younger that I thought. And while I still did what he said, they were still in there in my mind. And what I found over the years, usually it'd be about 2 or 3 years after some kind of situation would occur where Mr. Davis would tell me something or be an example to me about something, that I would finally say, oh, I see now. I didn't understand then, but now I do. And that happened enough in my own life that when there were and are situations where I don't quite understand mentally with my mind, with my little human brain, what my spiritual teacher was sharing with me, I had enough of those experiences where I realized if I had only trusted and done what I had been told, it probably would have been just fine. So now, when those situations arise, where I'm thinking about something Mr. Davis had said to me and it still doesn't quite make any sense, I don't worry about it. I apply to the best of my ability what he had shared with me. Because I know in the past that if I had done that earlier, realization would have been much quicker. So what we need to keep in mind is that we don't want to be gullible. We don't want to be foolish. We don't want to give away our power to someone just because we have some psychological issues we need to work out. But once we are fairly balanced in our life and we have the grace of interacting with a teacher that, again, has more experience in time and space than us, probably has more experience in going deeply into the silence than us. If we have that kind of blessing in our life, we want to respect it. We want to recognize that we need to do the work to wake up, to be clear, to have more inner peace, because that's what they did. And our spiritual teachers want us to have that same level of clarity and maturity that they have. They don't want us to simply worship them, hold them on a pedestal, and think that they represent something that is unattainable. That is self-sabotaging. That is not what this is about. That would be like a parent trying to keep the child dependent upon the parent. And we're not going to go into that, but you know how unhealthy that can be, most likely. Now, to return back here, while Sri Yukteswar was practical, was disciplined, had a focus on using one's willpower, being discerning, he was profoundly devotional. And again, I'm reminded of the words, or at least the sentiments, that I recall from Ramana Maharshi, where he had mentioned that if you are truly a jnani or jnana yogi, you're interested in discernment and intellectual development and understanding what the divine is, that is bhakti, or that is devotion. And the way I always think about that is that if you are devoted to your spouse, if you are devoted to a friend, if you are devoted to something, you pay attention. You do everything you can to learn about what do they really like. You anticipate their needs. You are interested in them. You're interested in being a part of their life. So by learning, in a sense, you are sharing your devotion. And when you have knowledge and you know what the truth of the essence of your being is, or what your relationship to the wholeness of life is, well, then you essentially develop profound devotion. So devotion and knowledge, they can lead to the same thing. And in fact, I remember reading a scripture that it said that just like a bird can't fly without two wings, well, the yogi can't fly without the wing of knowledge as well as the wing of devotion. Now, speaking of family, we may recall that Paramahansa Yogananda was often of the mind to run away to the mountains, run away to the Himalayas, to leave one's family behind. And so when Yogananda was a teenager and he thought of forsaking his family, Sri Yukteswar said to him, "Well, why exclude your family from your love of God?" And what he was implying here was that yoga practice is not about being divisive. It's not about seeing holiness somewhere and not somewhere else. Yes, there may be certain people, certain situations that naturally bring out your ease and your devotion. But there are, for all of us, no matter whether we're a yogi or not, going to be times and situations where we are feeling challenged or stressed or not quite at peace with ourselves. And not to compare family members to enemies, but if we think about when Jesus said, you know, love your enemies, you know, why try to love your friends? That's easy. Anyone can do that. But if you're able to love your enemies, then you truly have a sense of what it means to know that we are all one and we are all a part of, again, this wholeness of life. So while family can be challenging, and you might not necessarily want to spend all kinds of time with them, especially if they drive you nuts, because we all have some family member that does that, in time you work through learning to love them, seeing the truth of them, realizing that they are an expression of yourself. And when we are able to do that, we eventually become at peace with everyone. Now, Sri Yukteswar was known to sometimes visit his students in his subtle form. He would appear to them in dreams. He would appear to them in visions. And I'll see if I can dig this up. But in Autobiography of a Yogi, you may be aware of that quite fantastic chapter called The Resurrection of Sri Yukteswar. and how Shrikteshwar appeared to Yogananda after he passed. In fact, we'll just go ahead and consider that now, because I think it's an interesting story. And as always with the chapters in Autobiography of a Yogi, let's try to remember that there is a lot of fantastic claims. And I don't know anyone alive right now who was actually there when these things occurred. So the important part of what we read in books like Autobiography of a Yogi is that part, that underlying message and what it's trying to share. So we don't want to get hung up on the literalness of it all. We want to look more deeply into what is being shared. So this is from chapter 43 of Autobiography of a Yogi. Lord Krishna, the glorious form of the avatar, appeared in a shimmering blaze as I sat in my room at the Regent Hotel in Bombay, shining over the roof of a high building across the street. The ineffable vision had suddenly burst on my sight as I gazed out of my long, open third-story window. The divine figure waved to me, smiling and nodding and greeting. When I could not understand the exact message of Lord Krishna, he departed with a gesture of blessing. Wondrously uplifted, I felt that some spiritual event was presaged. My Western voyage had, for the time being, been canceled. I was scheduled for several public addresses in Bombay before leaving on a return visit to Bengal. Sitting on my bed in the Bombay Hotel at 3 o'clock in the afternoon of June 19th, 1936, 1 week after the vision of Krishna, I was aroused from my meditation by beatific light. Before my open and astonished eyes, the whole room was transformed into a strange world. The sunlight transmuted into supernal splendor. Waves of rapture engulfed me as I beheld the flesh and blood form of Sri Yukteswar. My son, Master spoke tenderly on his face, an angel-bewitching smile. For the first time in my life, I did not kneel at his feet in greeting, but instantly advanced to gather him hungrily in my arms. A moment of moments, the anguish of past months was a toll I counted weightless against the torrential bliss now descending. Master mine, beloved of my heart, why did you leave me? I was incoherent in an excess of joy. Why did you let me go to the Kumbh Mela? How bitterly have I blamed myself for leaving you? I did not want to interfere with your happy anticipation of seeing the pilgrimage spot where I first met Babaji. I left you only for a little while. Am I not again with you? But is it you, Master, the same Lion of God? Are you wearing a body like the one I buried beneath the cruel Puri sands? Yes, my child. I am the same. This is a flesh and blood body, though I see it as ethereal. To your sight, it is physical. From the cosmic atoms, I created an entirely new body, exactly like that cosmic dream physical body which you laid beneath the dream sands at Puri in your dream world. I am in truth resurrected, not on Earth, but on an astral planet. Its inhabitants are better able than earthly humanity to meet my lofty standards. There you and your exalted loved ones shall someday come to be with me. Deathless Guru, tell me more. Master gave a quick, mirthful chuckle. Please, dear one, he said, won't you relax your hold a little? Only a little. I had been embracing him with an octopus grip. I could detect the same faint, fragrant, natural odor which had been characteristic of his body before. The thrilling touch of his divine flesh still persists around the inner sides of my arms and in my palms whenever I recall those glorious hours. As prophets are sent on earth to help men work out their physical karma, so I have been directed by God to serve on an astral planet as a savior, Sri Yukteswar explained. It's called Hiranyaloka, or Illumined Astral Planet. There I am aiding advanced beings to rid themselves of astral karma and thus attain liberation from astral rebirths. The dwellers on Hiranyaloka are highly developed spiritually. All of them had acquired in their last earth incarnation the meditation-given powers of consciously leaving their physical bodies at death. No one can enter Hiranyaloka unless he has passed on earth beyond the state of Sabbakalpa Samadhi into the higher states of Nirbhikalpa Samadhi. The Hiranyaloka inhabitants have already passed through the ordinary astral spheres, where nearly all beings from earth must go at death. There they worked out many seeds of their past actions in the astral worlds. None but advanced beings can perform such redemptive work effectually in the astral worlds. Then, in order to free their souls more fully from the cocoon of karmic traces lodged in their astral bodies, these higher beings were drawn by cosmic law to be reborn with new astral bodies on Hiranyaloka, the astral sun or heaven where I have resurrected to help them. There are also highly advanced beings on Hiranyaloka who have come from the superior, subtler, causal world. My mind was now in such perfect attunement with my gurus that he was conveying his word pictures to me partly by speech and partly by thought transference. I was thus quickly receiving his idea tabloids. You have read in the scriptures, Master went on, that God encased the human soul successively in three bodies, the idea or causal body, the subtle astral body, seat of man's mental and emotional nature, and the gross physical body. On earth, a man is equipped with his physical senses. An astral being works with his consciousness and feelings and a body made of lifetrons. A causal-bodied being remains in the blissful realm of ideas. My work is with those astral beings who are preparing to enter the causal world. Adorable Master, please tell me more about the astral cosmos. Though I had slightly relaxed my embrace at Sri Yukteswar's request, my arms were still around him. There are many planets, many astral planets teeming with astral beings, Master began. The inhabitants use astral planes, or masses of light, to travel from one planet to another, faster than electricity and radioactive energies. The astral universe, made of various subtle vibrations of light and color, is hundreds of times larger than the material cosmos. The entire physical creation hangs like a solid basket under the huge luminous balloon of the astral sphere. Just as many physical suns and stars roam in space, so there are countless astral, solar, and stellar systems. Their planets have astral suns and moons, more beautiful than the physical ones. The astral luminaries resemble the aurora borealis, the sunny astral aurora being more dazzling than the mild-rayed moon aurora. The astral day and night are longer than those on Earth. The astral world is infinitely beautiful, clean, pure, and orderly. There are no dead planets or barren lands. The terrestrial blemishes, weeds, bacteria, insects, snakes are absent. Unlike the variable climates and seasons of the Earth, the astral planets maintain the even temperature of an eternal spring, with occasional luminous white snow and rain of many colored lights. Astral planets abound in opal lakes and bright seas and rainbow rivers. And Sri Yukteswar goes on to explain more details about the astral world and what he's up to on these astral planes. So this is one of those experiences where Sri Yukteswar was said to appear in a form to his students. Now, in this text, Sri Yukteswar mentions that where he is now, at least as of around 100 years ago, that the individuals on this particular plane of existence were able to understand his methods maybe a little more so than they could on Earth. And Paramahansa Yogananda said of him that he could have been, Sri Yukteswar, he could have been the most sought-after guru in India if it were not for his strict train of disciples. Now, when Paramahansa was preparing to come to America, Sri Yukteswar told him, "If you go now, all doors will be open to you." He had a keen interest in the development of yogic processes in the West. He also had a keen interest in, again, understanding the unity of all religions. And for him, there was a focus on seeing the yogic qualities within the Bible, within the teachings of Jesus. Because Sri Yukteswar had this profound interest in those who were spiritually directed, that they have a direct experience of self-realization, God-realization, and that that should not be limited to simply yogic procedures. And again, yogic procedures are simply that, procedures. You can be of any religion you want and still practice yogic techniques. And then your religion helps carry you, helps give you some context such that you can realize what is true for all of us. Now, Sri Yukteswar had a commentary, or at least he discussed kind of considering this idea of the unity between East and West. He discussed the idea of Genesis and the story of Adam and Eve. And this is also something from Autobiography of a Yogi. "So the Adam and Eve story is incomprehensible to me," Paramahansa Yogananda observed with considerable heat one day. "Why did God punish not only the guilty pair, but also the innocent unborn generations?" Sri Yukteswar was more amused by my vehemence than my ignorance. "Genesis is deeply symbolic and cannot be grasped by literal interpretation," he explained. "Its tree of life is the human body. The spinal cord is like an upturned tree, with man's hair as its roots and the afferent and efferent nerves as branches. The tree of the nervous system bears many enjoyable fruits or sensations of sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. In these, man may rightfully indulge, but he was forbidden the experience of sex. The apple at the center of the bodily garden. God created the human species by materializing the bodies of man and woman through the force of his will. He endowed the new species with the power to create children in a similar immaculate or divine manner. Because his manifestation in the individualized soul had hitherto been limited to animals, instinct-bound and lacking the potentialities of full reason, God made the first human bodies, symbolically called Adam and Eve. To these, for advantageous upward evolution, he transferred the souls or divine essence of two animals. In Adam or man, reason predominated. In Eve or woman, feeling was ascendant. Thus was expressed the duality or polarity which underlies the phenomenal worlds. Reason and feeling remain in a heaven of cooperative joy so long as the human mind is not tricked by the serpentine energy of animal propensities. The human body was therefore not solely a result of evolution from beasts, but was produced by an act of special creation by God. The animal forms were too crude to express full divinity. The human being was uniquely given a tremendous mental capacity, the thousand-petaled lotus of the brain, as well as acutely awakened occult centers in the spine." So this is referencing the chakras and the ability to circulate life force through the spine that we base Kriya Yoga practices on. "God, or the divine consciousness present within the first created pair, counseled them to enjoy all human sensibilities, but not to put their concentration on touch sensations. These were banned in order to avoid the development of the sex organs, which would enmesh humanity in the inferior animal method of propagation. The warning not to revive subconsciously present bestial memories was not heeded. Resuming the way of brute procreation, Adam and Eve fell from the state of heavenly joy natural to the original perfect man. Knowledge of good and evil refers to the cosmic dualistic compulsion. Falling under the sway of Maya through misuse of his feeling and reason, or Eve and Adam, consciousness, man relinquishes his right to enter the heavenly garden of divine self-sufficiency. The personal responsibility of every human being is to restore his parents, or dual nature, to a unified harmony, or Eden. As Sri Yukteswar ended his discourse, I glanced with new respect at the pages of Genesis. So what we see is Sri Yukteswar has looked at, explored this mythology of Genesis, and ties it very easily to the yogic ideal. Now, some people won't necessarily like this, and they'll reject it, because, simple, it's because when we've been in a human body so long, and all we know is the human experience and the human mind, we want to find comfort there. We want to find lasting enjoyment there. And again, you've heard me talk about it, this idea of it's almost as if we are addicted to the world, and that's why we're here in this world. So when people bring up questions like, well, why are we in this world where there's so much trouble and difficulty and agony mixed in with all the beauty and love and grace? Well, it's here because we have a sense of over-attachment and addiction to these experiences. Just like the addict has the high from the drug, but then also experiences that extreme low. So by being in this world, we have the high of experiencing touch sensation, but then we also have that low which follows it when we realize it doesn't last and does not lead to lasting fulfillment. So it's easy to want to reject this, just like the addict will reject help. The addict doesn't think he has a problem. The addict doesn't understand why the world just can't have all the drugs at once and everything to be fine. So the same thing happens here. And Sri Yukteswar has used the symbology of the Adam and Eve story to relate to this. It is by attachment to these dualities, and yes, we are attached to them, that causes us to not truly understand or be able to comprehend a divine state or a state of wholeness or a state of complete serene peace. And that is why in the yogic procedures, we learn to internalize our attention, to withdraw our senses such that we can see, well, what is there beyond the senses? What is there that exists without the senses? And once we get a taste of that, a glimpse of that, then hopefully, ideally, we start to give our full attention to that, and then we let the karma of our physical bodily experience exhaust itself without adding more momentum to the wheel. So Sri Yukteswar does this very well in this understanding of the story of Adam and Eve. And someone asked me one time if they could still be a Kriya Yogi if they don't believe that story, if they don't resonate with it, if they don't think that it's true. And my response was, there are plenty of Kriya Yogis out there with all kinds of weird ideas that are still able to practice, so it doesn't really matter whether you believe it or understand it or not. And the questioner seemed to think that I was implying that I did not agree with the story or the understanding of Genesis, as Sri Yukteswar put it. And my only response that came to me was, you know, the questioner was implying that I was being dishonorable, or is it okay to be dishonorable by not believing the things that certain people say, who are meant to be respected teachers in a tradition? And so my response was, I think Sri Yukteswar was wise enough and clear enough to not be too concerned about whether I believed what he said, or he was wise enough to not be too concerned about what someone like little Ryan believed or thought. Moral of all this is, it doesn't really matter where you fall in the spectrum of belief or understanding, as long as you are doing your meditation practices, as long as you are endeavoring to find a way to withdraw your senses and turn within, eventually what is true will be revealed to you, and you're going to find that that's ultimately beyond words or descriptions or mythologies anyway. So back to Sri Yukteswar. So Sri Yukteswar left his body on March 9th, 1935. His body was buried in a garden at the Puri Ashram. And instead of cremation, it's the general practice in India, from what I understand, that the physical remains of saints are buried because they are considered to have already burnt the body. They have already considered to have renounced their worldly attachments. And so burial sites are considered to be significant places of pilgrimage. Now, it was 3 months after his transition that Paramahansa saw and conversed with Sri Yukteswar, which we've already read a portion of the autobiography of a yogi where he describes this. But in this, Sri Yukteswar gave Yogananda personal information about world trends. He explained the details about life in subtle realms and described where he was on Hiranyaloka. And in Calcutta, a newspaper carried the following story after Sri Yukteswar's passing. One of the great expounders of the Bhagavad Gita, Swami Maharaj, was a great disciple of Yogiraj Sri Shama Charan Lahiri Mahasaya of Benares. Swami Maharaj was the founder of several Yogoda Satsanga centers in India, and was the great inspiration behind the yoga movement which was carried to the West by Swami Yogananda, his principal disciple. It was Sri Yukteswar's prophetic powers and deep realization that inspired Swami Yogananda to cross the oceans and spread in America the message of the masters of India. His interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures testify to the depth of Sri Yukteswarji's command of philosophy, both Eastern and Western, and remain as an eye-opener for the unity between Orient and Occident. As he believed in the unity of all religious faiths, Sri Yukteswar Maharaj established the Sadhu Sabha, Society of Saints, for the inculcation of a scientific spirit of religion. At the time of his demise, he nominated Swami Yogananda as his successor as the president of Sadhu Sabha. India is really poor today by the passing of such a great man. May all fortunate enough to have come near him inculcate in themselves the true spirit of India's culture and sadhana, which was personified in him. So it's said that a few months before Yukteswar's Mahasamadhi, or passing into oneness, Yogananda noticed a loose tile on the roof of Yukteswar's ashram and asked permission to have it repaired. Yukteswar replied, "As long as I am here, it will not fall." The day he passed, it fell to the ground. Many of the centers that Yukteswar started were merged with Yogoda Satsanga. This is the Self-Realization Fellowship organization in India. And they continue to serve to this day. And some of his disciples, some of Sri Yukteswar's disciples, also continued as Kriya teachers without organizational affiliation. So there's much more that you can read and understand about Sri Yukteswar. A wonderful book to read of his is The Holy Science. The Holy Science is a fantastic book. It does cover the yugas, or the great cosmic cycles, which we will discuss in a podcast or two from now. Autobiography of a Yogi. There are numerous stories of Paramahansa Yogananda's exchanges and relationship with Sri Yukteswar. So it's another wonderful resource. And if you can find it, there is a Bhagavad Gita commentary that Sri Yukteswar wrote. So you can continue to learn about Sri Yukteswar in that way.
This episode of the Kriya Yoga podcast was made possible by donations from Kriya Yoga apprenticeship students and supporters of our Patreon community at www.patreon.com/ Kriya Yoga.